5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10.
What I'm doing is trying to write a study on the impact of race relations on the development of the planet. And by that, I don't mean just racism, and how race impacts on certain decisions. Mm-hmm. I got a few questions I feel like you go over. First of all, let me get this: the positions you've held over the years in terms of.
Okay. I started with the city in the Hartsfield administration as parks engineer. My basic degree was in landscape and architecture, and I got graduate work from Tech and Carnegie Mellon. And I was parks engineer from 56 to 58 when I went into the planning, and so basically I was one of the planners up until about 59, and then I was chief planner for the city. 65, and then director of planning from 65 to 79.
So through the Allen, part of the Allen administration?
Yeah, all of the Allen. Well, Allen appointed me to the directorship, but I was basically chief planner at the beginning of his running, and then all the way through Macell and
Jackson.
Into the Jackson.
And then I guess the end of the year, I
suppose? Leon came in as a result of a charter. In other words, total new charter for the city, reorganization of city government. And under the new structure of reorganization, Pepin came in.
He was Commissioner of Planning and Budget, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let me go on to a few things that I've heard from other people that I wanted to either corroborate or get your opinion and see how the truth is.
Keep in mind that, okay. you're going to have to work with me. I mean, when I got away in 59, I cut the city off. I've been thinking something entirely different for about 7 years now, so...
I understand.
This quick recall is going to be something.
Well, whatever you heard
about. Okay, yeah.
On the building of the stadium.
Okay.
Now, what I heard is that Mayor Allen had planned to put some white projects where the stadium is now. The black leaders protested that they didn't want a white project there. If housing was to be built, it would be, they wanted it for blacks. Business leaders didn't want a black project on the edge of the CBD. Allen was caught in a political dilemma and therefore decided on the stadium as a suitable buffer. Your memories on that one?
I don't believe it was all right, but I'm sure some of that must have been there. I think it was more in Allen's close ties with the business community and wanting a National League team in here. And at that time, Atlanta was taking advantage of and doing a very good job of getting every federal dollar it could get flowing this to what, you know, in direction. Every program that the federal government ginned up there, Atlanta tried to take advantage of it. So we had gone through a process of building freeways and eliminating slum areas, big on urban renewal, big on public housing and replacement housing. And that represents some vacant land close to the central business district with freeway access. And I think it was as much of getting a catalyst close to the central business district that would draw business. I think he had, I would have bet he would have been more oriented to the business aspects of it than and never really thought about. Even though he was involved in buffers and at one time, I don't believe that was something that foremost in his mind, except as it came from the business community. You know, what's good for the business community type of thing.
But there was no sense that you saw that he, in terms of trying to build white projects there first and then protest and all that.
There were no white projects being proposed or thought of in that. That was was basically the residential area of the early 1900s up to World War II.
Right.
And after World War II is when Atlanta kind of started to bloom, and whites started to move out following job opportunities, leaving that older residential area. Slumlords took advantage of that. They weren't slumlords when they began, but they ended up slumlords of just rotating large number of families through houses that were designed for one, two families, and just sucked it dry, really. And then it was just cleared out. So you had chunks, large chunks of land. There could have been, I'm sure there was a lot of concern about the number of public housing units that were being built in Atlanta about that time. And there could have been concern about just continually adding large housing projects that close to the central business district.
Was there any sense of
but it wasn't, you know, I think it was becoming, because as that was when we were already probably at a time we already had the largest public housing program in the country. And if you look at how that public housing is located, there was a lot of concern about building another public housing project of X thousand units.
Someone will probably come
tell me, baby. Yeah.
Was there any sense of the stadium or the civic center as the buffers or as a way of removing blacks from the downtown area? I know there's an economic aspect to this, but there's a racial aspect to this too.
I'm sure that I don't know if that particular, other than that was just building public housing, and the fact that the black low-income family was the major tenant of that public housing. It was completely surrounded. The central business was completely surrounded by the black community at that point anyway. So I don't I just don't, under Allen, I don't know what you've heard, but I don't think he was, had a that strong of racial bias. I'm sure the influence of the business community and their concern about the market drying up downtown, and they were designed to service the white middle class, and the white middle class had gone, and people like Riches and so forth, you know, they were really struggling, and it hadn't been many years prior to that point that they were, had refused. They were going to stay just where they were. They weren't going to shopping centers. Their main point was to stay downtown. And of course, after they started out, they saw the shortfall of staying downtown. But
the fact that most of the public housing was built on the west side, that indicates some attempt to shift black population in that direction. Although there were a lot of complaints in the black community about all the housing being built on the west side, and that built in the northeast, for example.
Yeah. That's finding large chunks of land, and of course, you know, you just there was also this thing of any apartments. Atlanta was basically you know, the single family, thought of as a single family type of a thing. And so that was a fight. I didn't care where you tried to put an apartment unit, and you put the connotation to low income apartment unit, and you really had yourself a fight on your hands. You got a jar out of that than you would out of trying to run one of those freeways around. And of course, that was a lot of fun at that time too, of riding freeways.
Let me look at something else. One of the things Leon Eflin said to me was that streets terminated in Atlanta as they passed from black to white neighborhoods. There were a few continuous streets in the city that various barriers were created. For example, he mentioned the dead ending of termination of Willis Mill Road, which is five blocks south of Gordon, to prevent blacks from expanding south of the Cascade area. And then the Willis Mill Road begins again at Cascade Road. In other words, it was Gordon that came down a little bit, then I think it dead ends around where Westview Cemetery is, and there's nothing for a long time, and it picks up again at Cascade. And the feeling here was that that was an attempt to prevent blacks from having a continuous road coming down into the Cascade area.
Well, it wasn't Willis Mill, but it's that Willis Mill corridor, I guess. It was Peyton Road was where the big barrier was put in the wall and so forth. But the Willis Mill, Willis Mill was a north-south route back Civil War days, and it never, you know, there was a tie in there at one time. But other than the Peyton Road blockade, that was the only effort that was ever made to using a roadway or blocking a roadway.
How about just
Willis Mill? I mean, they're right. There's no north-south movement on the west side of the city now, except for 285. You can't find any north-south streets.
About a
continuum.
Why would that be? Was it an attempt to block black expansion, you think?
If it was, it was done back in the early 1900s. It could have very well been. But it certainly wasn't done. In other words, that was pre-Hartsfield times. Or it could have been. You used to hear a lot about Hartsfield and his dealings. and trades with the black community and so forth. And that might have been a part of some of that.
Any use of I-20 as a barrier or as a buffer at all?
I don't think so.
How about?
I think you had a strong economic pull. And getting highways to crisscross through the city, somebody thought back at the tail end of World War II that that was the thing, you know, that we were going to be the transportation hub here. And that's, you know, they may have been foresighted enough to see that they were carving up the city and saying to the white community, this is yours and this is yours, the black community has it.
That's the way it almost seemed to be happening.
But that was before my time. That was something that was done way back. And it's hard to conceive that anybody had that kind of foresight of the potential of Atlanta at that time. I just the airport wasn't working and the transportation hub wasn't, you know, we were a railroad hub, but and dealing with those people, if they, that was dumb luck or dumb, you know, they stumble into it. I just don't think that there was that kind of a foresight. And I've worked with a lot of the business community and the political entity, state, local, all through the 60s and the 70s when all of this really bootleg. And these guys didn't have that kind of crystal ball, and they were every time we turned around we were overrun because nobody anticipated the growth. You know, we'd say it's gonna triple and it would quadruple.
Sure. Who did expect it?
And I've always had a hard time just seeing even Hartsfield sitting down with the black and white community and carving the city up. But they said that was done.
Well, it seems to be done, yeah. How about the use of access roads, railroad spurs, public housing integration buffers? Any information on that at all? Any way that would be?
I don't think so. I mean, let's put it this way. I know it wasn't open policy. Naturally, it wouldn't be. But as a department head working in that, there was nothing that was in, you know, deliberate or intentional along those particular lines. I don't care what people feel or think. You know, it was not set down in any master scheme or plot.
Now, this isn't necessarily racism. A lot of times it was seen as a way of having the whites in the community accept blacks coming in by creating some sort of buffer. In other words, otherwise it would be total hostility to the black community.
Yeah. The buffers were established way back. You know, but and I'm way back being early 1900s and so forth. I think there was more done openly in those time frames in the 20s and so forth, and, you know, that carried over, you know, and the fact that there was no roads in a particular area, and there was just, you know, no movement in that particular area. With public housing in the 60s, you know, it was where you could get the darn thing zoned. It was where somebody had, people would come, they would be wanting, they would really beg the city to put them in an urban renewal project. And the urban renewal project then would turn out clearing large areas. And when you cleared large areas, that represented about the only place that you could get the public to agree to zone the land for multi-housing units.
Maybe a lot of the more was done during hospital, because I come across a few things in the hospital administration in terms of, like, I think the Joe Chandler Harris project, which was right initially, placed at a certain point near Westview Drive as sort of a dividing line. That was the purpose.
Mm-hmm.
So that was hard to do. Let me mention something that comes during your period that I came across. Quite a few of the Bureau of Planning papers are now in the Historical Society.
Mm-hmm.
And I came across a report. It's called Report on the Adamsville Transition Area in 1960. And it reads like this. Just approximately 2 to 3 years ago, there was an understanding that the proposed route of the West Expressway would be the boundary line between white and Negro communities. Apparently this was seen as an effort to stabilize the area. The highway was marked out where it intersected major streets. The black builders refused permission to build low to moderate income housing south of the planned highway. They were refused on the basis that the city had obligations to the Adamsville citizens to adhere to the expressway route boundary. But apparently there, and that's a Bureau of Planning report, that a road, I guess 20 was laid out in that area with the express purpose of blacks on one side, whites on the others, and an effort by blacks to build south of that line was denied by the city. That's what spurred a lot of these questions, as you can see, that it was a document. Do you remember anything about that at all? Now, the actual deal was probably cut 2 to 3 years before 1960, so it's really more than they.
The Adamsville,
it was hospital.
Yeah, I remember that report, but I sure don't remember that language. That's fine. It really is. But did you ever go get into the old Lochner report?
Yes.
Highway report? Did that have
any of this material?
Any of that type of material in it?
No, apparently these were agreements worked out after the variations of law. But I think
it was more of justification. In other words, I don't know that the freeway was put there as a barrier, but it could have very well been a line, and they said, okay, we'll use it as a, you know, a barrier type of a thing. It may have come in the back door.
I mean, we're building this highway anyway. Let's build it a certain way where it can serve as a barrier. Now, I think the Hawkesville administration saw this not as, again, not as anything against the black community, but as a way of giving the black community land without the whites. So it's not particularly racism.
Yeah, it was access to, into an area. But I, I don't recall any points at which, you know, zoning was denied or building permits were denied because on a, you know, on a racial basis like that.
This is not the first one I came across.
Yeah.
There was one in which black builders were allowed to build only to, I think, 100 yards of Westview Drive. And so it became a dead man's area.
Yeah.
And,
around that Westview Cemetery, Peyton Road, there must have been something real strong at that particular point to pull Allen into that trap that he got into, because we were begging him not to. It was just a no-win type of situation, and it was. I never really knew who he was so indebted to, or aligned with, to follow through on that particular step. He was not the type. That was just out, totally out of character.
He sort of, so it seems.
Yeah.
In regard to that, what I've been told also is that apparently after the Peyton Wall incident in 62, an agreement was reached between white and black leaders, behind the scenes, that the blacks would not be opposed anymore moving into all of the Southwest. The area would shift racially with the city's blessings, that the blacks could move in these directions, and the plan was now slated for expansion. This was not told to the white community, but apparently Allen was not going to make any more attempts to restrict black coming to the Southwest. I guess he was embarrassed enough by Peyton Moore. All restrictions were now removed.
Yeah.
That area was slated for black expansion. The whites, in a sense, were expendable.
I don't think anybody had an idea that the black community had the economic buying power that they had. I think that they felt that was going to be a movement that they would accept, and but they thought it was coming at a much slower pace. It moved through areas in the then 50,000, 60,000, and 70,000, which was an economic range that the black community just didn't have a strong buying power. And I think that caught a lot of the white community by surprise by over in this particular area. But it moved along much faster. It did move kind of as a wave. And it's a typical type of black-white conflict movement type of a situation. So,
apparently the blacks were able to jump over barriers that had been set by the Hawkesville administration. And according to this, at least, Alan just gave up instead of taking more. We want to get involved in that type of restriction and open up the area to blacks. The thing is, he didn't tell the whites about it. This was a secret behind-the-scenes agreement. And I guess my feeling is that the whites here were politically expendable. They weren't Alan supporters anyway, for the most part. He was getting his votes from the blacks and from the North Side whites.
Yeah.
And this was let go.
Could have been. I think, you know, you could be naive enough to, I could be naive enough to think that if he had no agreements whatsoever, he had been pushed into a situation of putting up a barrier against his better judgment. And he said, let the economic, you know, let there be no barriers. And that never thought in terms of private expenditure or blacks, you know, trade-offs and this type of thing.
Most of what I'm hearing about this is coming from the black community. People have spoken to the black community. It's not something that Alan particularly admitted to.
Mm-hmm.
It's really probably looking at coming from people like Robert Thompson, who was very involved in the urban league.
You know, the black community liked to think that they were winning battles, and there was black leadership that were claiming a lot of things, that they had concession. There was no such thing.
Well, you know, were they winning?
It was a natural process. Mm. You know, the resistance had been relieved. The market was there, and it moved.
So you think it would have happened no matter what, Alan, what it was going to be?
Yeah, and I don't think it would have happened regardless of what some black leaders might have been claiming. They were thumping their chest for any kind of wins. And to be able to go back to that group and say, I've got this type of concession. We now have this area. We've been promised this area. It was a way of thumping their chest and floating to the top of the pile. And I bet it was more of that than it was and just the normal expansion and a normal just if it was just a release. And you know, it's hard economics sometimes have, and many times have, more influence on growth and directions of growth than public policy. It's a stupid public policy, right? You know, it's just not very enlightened sometimes. And I was amazed at the business community, how they made decisions in many instances. You would think that it had grand plans and thoughts, and a lot of times it's just because old Joe just built a 40-story, I'm going to build me a 42.
Well, things often happen like that.
Yeah. And
it's really, you know, as a historian trying to sort of sort out the truth for all this, it's really hard to deal with a lot of this because it's not written down behind the scenes, and I'm relying on the word of a lot of people who were at those meetings and privy to decisions being made. It's really about to get a grasp of
it. But as one department head, and that had the ear of the mayor during those particular years, and they were just all of this was plotting, what you need.
Yeah.
Okay. The strategy and plotting and so forth never came through governmental structure.
So if anything was done that you didn't know about was done on the mayor's level with the business leaders, let's say.
Yeah, they had to do it somewhere in on the golf course or in a meeting or something like this. And the point being, it was just me talking to you type of a thing and agreeing. And I can't conceive that that would have any impact on how the general growth pattern and push was going. Other than the black community saying, okay, you know, we can go into this area, and they focus their attention on that particular area. I think that to a large degree, private enterprise, even today, when you came into town and sought to buy your home and went to a real estate guy, he sure didn't show you south that line. I mean, if you were going to be with the up here, you know, he showed you Cobb County, North Carolina, and they've been doing this for a long time.
And they've been directing the races in two directions, sure.
Right. But to find a political strategy, it wasn't there to find.
Yet I see that there's Annisville report.
I know it.
And that seems to suggest that the blacks couldn't move any place they wanted to move to. There were political deals restricting them. And maybe that's what Arnold was referring to by saying now the area's open, no more deals. That's what I sort of get back to.
But you're going to have to go back. You know, you're going to have to, we're not talking about 60, 70. We're talking about anywhere from 30s to the 50s.
Yeah.
It could have been more of, in a narrow period of time, it could have been more in the mid-40s to early 50s, that five-year time following World War II.
It was a big,
big
need for black expansion.
That's right. Things were happening there, and that could have, you know, by focusing attention kind of to that, maybe it could have happened in a 5-year period of time there.
I think the hospital administration was probably more involved. Another thing I was looking at was the High Point development on Pryor Road. Okay, what I had heard that the problem here was that the proposed express highway, which I guess is South Expressway, was pushed westward from its original position as proposed in the Loughlin report originally, pushed westward. It was shifted away from its original position by to property proposed for the High Point project by through pressure by white real estate developers. Blacks went to Washington to complain. They got the highway shifted back to where it was supposed to be so that the High Point development could be built. Any remembrances about that? Now that may have been late 1940s.
Yeah, that was. In fact, I was in college at that particular point on a surveying team. In fact, I led a surveying team that located many of the buildings of that development.
Well, apparently, from what I gathered, the road was supposed to go around it at first, then it was shifted to go right through the project so as to kill the projects.
Mm-hmm.
And then because the blast came from the plains of Washington, it was shifted back to where it is now.
Mm-hmm.
That's the type of thing I'm looking for, too, just how...
Well, okay. Knowing the engineer that did it, or not the engineer, but engineers in general, they took a butt alignment, probably a straight alignment in there, and they're trying to relieve that curve right now.
Right. True. Might have been made sense in the first place.
Yeah. I bet you that knowing the mentality of the engineer at that particular point, I mean, they were really kind of raining down.
Right.
They put it, you know, the best alignment and design alignment that they could come up with. And again, it was saw as a racial move when probably some little turkey on a drawing table had made a straight line and somebody didn't pick it up till it was too late. And then they hollered that it was a racial issue. And it left the appearance. And it was shifted alignment around that particular area, which is bad engineering, in which they're spending millions of dollars.
They didn't have a good politics.
Yeah, I know I must be sounding like I'm any or trying to fight any of these racial issues, but well, I was never approached, never, and that really amazed me. Through a lot of this, really, I guess it's why it stuck so tight, is how no one ever pressured me, no one ever, you know, on a zoning, on anything, had anything to do with something like this. They just did not, that was just taboo. If it was done, it was done some other area, and it was other reasons, and just like this engineering thing, you know, you would be openly trying to do something right, and only have it twisted. You know, you go, how did they get that out of it? You know, and you know, it was just a lot of that. Where the black-white politician type or black-white guy, a community leader, was searching for any action, anything that could be cast in a racial tone. Now, that was kind of the early 60s. I mean, you know, and, you know, you'd be standing there, how did they draw that conclusion, you know? And it looked like a major plot, but some, you know, you'd be just working away, trying to do it right, and you may have, you know, we may have been guilty of not being super sensitive to certain things at first, and planning it, following good planning and good engineering characteristics. Our parameters were drawn up using, you know, a technical thing and not thinking about the human effect.
I also came across something on the east-west rail line that it was developed first east-west to win the support of the black community for the bond issue, even though apparently there was a study that indicated the east-west could be served by a bus line more economically. The north-south rail line was really needed more.
Yeah.
And that basically was when it's split by community.
Yeah.
How about the... Go ahead.
That was going on. And it was going on parallel to again, engineering types of criteria. and cost money criteria. And it, when those two balanced out, it happened. But that was a concession. It made a concession to two things, the black community and DeKalb County. And to get that east-west, in other words, to get the two counties there to support it. DeKalb County would not support a north-south line initially, even though that was where it should have been built. But, and to get the DeKalb County concession and support and the black community support, that line. Also, we had a corridor through there. We could use the existing rail alignment, and because it was, you know, we just followed under the city at that particular point, and you could build that line cheaper, and you could get that line. You could actually set up the east part of it. It was following straight out as your test track or your test section. So engineering wise, cost and the strategy for building the system that's not right. That was there, but I don't think the timing of that was, in other words, the timing of the election was before the engineering. I mean, they knew those things and they were selling it on that particular basis. But the stronger rationale for building that east-west line was the federal political support
and black community
and DeKalb County. I don't think the black community thing was but just part of it. Getting DeKalb County, you would have not gotten DeKalb County without it.
Well, you probably wouldn't have gotten the black community without it. If you had built the north-south line instead, I thought they would have voted for the bond.
I don't know.
That's what it seems to me. It seems that they wanted something to serve the black community.
Of the 60s and 70s, I imagine that was as good an example of a concession totally to the black community that if you could scratch around and find out.
Mm-hmm. That was the promise made also. Mm-hmm.
Since you were involved with Alan Marcel and the Jackson administration, did you see any changes at all in dealing with, let's say, racial related issues that you needed from one administration to the other?
I think it was more of, as far as planning was concerned, it was more a period of time of doing some planning. Of moving from just a process of zoning into transportation and housing and all, and really doing some. And to do planning, we had to involve people. And I think with a large urban renewal program that we had during the 60s, we learned the need for citizen involvement. And there was more and more involvement built into the planning process. First, it was urban renewal, and then model cities, and then it was neighborhoods and citywide. So, you know, you got a more involvement of the people as we went through these processes. More people knew what was going on and knew why, and they were in there debating their project over somebody else's project type of thing, or debating why they didn't want something in their backyard but somebody else had it.
I guess that's probably the pressure from the federal government to get people involved in the planning process.
Initially, in the urban renewal part of it. But after we got into that and had some experience with that, the involvement of people in the planning process, and a lot of that grew after the urban renewal and the model cities thing, grew out of highway, you know, the north-south freeway, 485 thing on the east side, you know, and large planning and engineering types of projects that started, the public started to see, this is shaping the city, you know, this, where we're going to live type of thing. But, and that greater involvement, people knew exactly what was coming down all the way around and up to the really got into it, they were not involved. They saw such a small area. That's why I have a hard time conceiving somebody sitting back with some super master plan and carving up the city, because they just, nobody thought in those terms. Well, and we were not unique. I mean, in the American city, I don't believe it was that, you know, we were doing as much as anybody else were.
Except I did come across a report in the late 1940s, Hartsfield administration, that the blacks had proposed six areas that they were going to expand, but they actually did write it out. And that was more or less accepted by Hartsfield and by the land at that time. So it actually was a plan. We want this land, this world going. So those were the plans. Did you see any more attention paid to the south side on the Jackson at all?
I think I saw more effort from Jackson to work to get the black politician in, to get the black more heavily involved in all phases, you know, every city department. So to that extent, I think it may have been more, because you were dealing more with blacks in charge of and making decisions and recommendations, and their recommendations may have been stronger to the south, where they were. The reason we had moved through a phase where bond issues were just taboo. You know, you couldn't pass a bond. And without those bond issues, there were no major projects being built. You know, in quadrants where they were, you had an opportunity of saying, we're going to have a bond issue, and this is the projects, and you're getting a piece of the pie, and you're getting a piece of pie. That was in the Allen administration, early thing, trying to get things spread around. But your services, I'm sure that the services were probably improved in the black community. I think it was, I really think that the improvements were made citywide. And by making them citywide, they are improved in areas that had been, where preference may have been given earlier, and made everything kind of equal. And to the point, the effort of making it equal citywide, it improved everybody type of thing, or improved areas, some areas more than others.
I was this area when it, this must have gone through a transition, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Are there any white families living here at all?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. But it's still probably 30%.
This is really one of the few.
This area will probably be the, you know, it's going to have its time. It'll have its, you know, people coming back in and renovating, and because it just offers an awful great opportunity. We just kind of stuck it out here. I've never had any problems whatsoever here.
You were how old?
Oh, about 25 years.
So you were here during times, I guess, when the people trying to blockbuster the...
Oh, yeah. And, you know, the main things that happen is the change in your schools. But it went further than that, was that all your friends kind of, the families, you know, the church ties all left, and the church folds up, type thing like that.
Did the public schools deteriorate at all in St. John, transitional experience?
Yeah, I think so.
So I came across that in Cascade.
The schools, I know we shifted our children into the private school in Woodward, and that was one of the reasons to stay here. I mean, I had no sense in moving from this particular area. I wanted to stay in the city. I knew what was happening citywide. And it made no sense to me whatsoever to try to run.
Well, you always had the school problems, us.
And
did you find the city making any effort at all to save this area, save it as an integrated area? No help whatsoever. No infusion of money into the schools to make them satisfying to whites, or in other words, you're on your own.
Everybody just kind of grabbed him.
Well, that's what I mean before when I said that maybe Alan just said, well, the area's open now, we're not going to do anything.
Yeah.
But the wisest of it, you know, it's your area, black community, and take what you can get.
Yeah. I don't think they were, again, you know, it was, the services were put out on a citywide basis. The schools were just going downhill anyway, type of thing. It wasn't just this particular area. The schools were just in big trouble. And I don't believe there would have been anything that they could have done to single out an area and say, okay, we're going to beat this particular area up. No one in the schools were even willing to say that there were any problems at that particular time.
Well, I came across an organization called Southwest Alliance of Cardinals.
Yeah.
They probably were petitioning a lot of education to improve the schools in that particular community. And they were getting a hook at all.
Yeah.
And then finally the area just went black and vice versa.
Yeah, well, the schools probably had, that was seems like the magic point was about 40%. And when it hit, it just, the area just changed overnight. If those white families had just stopped to think, it was just because it was a black family moving in, they had their minds, they were thinking in terms of black families being low income. That's what they come in contact with, low income, I guess. And they never stopped to think that the black family in the same income range, economic range, is desires and needs just not that different.
Well, it's also very different.
Yeah, and
it's interesting community to have that mix. It's very unusual.
Yeah. Well, we've had some family, extremely good neighbors. Couldn't be more helpful, much more helpful than any white neighbor. I had Jack Summers over on one side of me, who was a councilman for years and years and years. Not really. I got Dr. Green, who was head of Morehouse Medical School, and we worked together, and a better neighbors than Jack and I ever were, really. So,
are there any other people that you think are worthwhile to contact at all that might know about that period? I'm not even sure who's still around anymore, really, in terms of who's operating. I mean, I've come across names like Jim Parham.
Jim Parham.
Yeah.
I don't know where Jim is. There's
a few people that seem to be involved in policy decisions regarding city planning.
Yeah. Jim, I haven't heard from him in years. He did some things on a grassroots level that got to be known. He did a great job in the West End area, and just one man, no backing, no support, but just got in and did more than a lot of the governmental actions that were just pumping a lot of money in a lot of directions, not too wisely. Our urban renewal program was a doozy, I'll tell you.
That didn't work most.
Yeah, so many of those things. The strategy was go after the federal dollar because you couldn't have the local dollar. But those programs were so, many of them were so inconceived. There's no way for them to work. No way. Someone else that would. I was, I got into city government, and I was the young kid, and I got a department. I was the youngest department head that's ever been in there, I think. And so you pretty well had to be about 50 or 60 before you ever got a shot in the department there in that time frame. And I got in when I was about 35, so a lot of these people that were involved in this stuff are just long gone.
Actually, I think you and Van Epplin are the two youngest people I've interviewed, actually.
Yeah.
In terms of people who were involved in that period.
Yeah. And much older. Some guy that, one fellow that might be interesting to talk to, have you talked with Charles Davis?
Who's he?
He was the finance director for the city of Atlanta during the same time frame that I was there. Very powerful individual. He grew up under he kind of came in at the tail end of the Hartsley. And he would have a little different viewpoint, I think. He would have a viewpoint of where the money was going. And
it's really hard to get people who are going back to the Horsley administration, which is a number of years already.
Yeah, all of his department people or heads were in the 60s. And Charles Davis is just a few years older. Charles and myself. We were about the only two there, and we were just, we really had to fight from scratch, I tell you. And Charles had the money strings, and so he had some real control, and actually doing a lot of this earlier phase was having more say-so over the planning than planners were having. That's right. And that was the big effort. I wonder if I did a good service, but the main things that I was got done really was to get that charter. I didn't get it done, but I was there and was one of the people that were really pushing for a charter. And to get the budgeting, some relationship between budgeting and planning.
Makes sense. It's too big splitting it now.
And yeah, they slid backwards and everything. But at least things were tied down. In many instances, MARTA got tied down. And every one of those transit stations are designed and tied down. A zoning ordinance was written that will guide and accept the type of development that you could pull around those transit stations. And it's gonna be hard for somebody to screw it up. It's one of those things like happening way back yonder where it just changing administration is not going to change the government moving along, you know.
Yeah. Doesn't do it on a national level, so I guess.
But Charles was involved, very much involved with Allen and money and expenditures and the stadium and urban renewal. Early phases of that.
He's moving, is he?
Yeah. Yeah, now, I don't know. Now, well, you can't do anything else, check with the finance, the Commissioner of Finance right now. He knows where Charles is. I'm sure.
I'll just try to phone him first.
Yeah. He may have moved, he may be 30 miles away or something like that, but he's still fairly close. He had some land. They may have moved out on the farm or moved to a lake around here or something like that. But I think you'd enjoy talking with him. He's a unique one.
This has actually been the best part of the study, just meeting a lot of people who've been involved back in those periods. In front of about 20 interviews of every white and black interviews. It's going to be very interesting.
Well, then you found, obviously, you dug through the archives,
yeah,
and got a great deal of information.
Well, the archives have been the most important. The Hartsfield papers are available at Emory. And all the Bureau of Planning material is at the High Point.